Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
We are a part of the Mental Health News Radio Network.
Tuned in to Rescue the Rescuer, the show that focuses on helping first responders who may be experiencing challenges such as addiction, PTSD, relationship failure, and more. We use stories of struggle and recovery to highlight successful survival strategies for those in this powerfully stressful field of work. And now, here's your host, Stephen Kovalkovich.
Hey everyone, this is Stephen. Thanks for joining me on the show. I'm a former paramedic in long-term recovery from addiction and post-traumatic stress disorder. I've created this podcast to help others who may be experiencing a story similar to mine find a path beyond their problems and towards a life that they deserve. Before we get started with today's episode, let's hear this short message from one of my supporters. I recently read an article that said 81% of Americans would like to become a published author. Chances are you might be one of them, right? I know I am. So what's stopping us? Writing and publishing a book takes a lot of work, can be a pain, and is expensive too, right? Not anymore. For my next book project, I've teamed up with Hassle-Free Books. They're making it easy for me to become an author. They are removing a lot of the fuss and struggle and making it smooth and simple. And it's far more affordable than you could ever imagine. Go to hasslefreebooks.com and use promo code RESCUE to receive a 10% discount off any book project. Get started right away and become a published author in as little as 45 days. That's hasslefreebooks.com, promo code RESCUE. All right, thanks again for joining me, and let's get started with today's show. Hey guys and gals, so thanks for tuning in again, and today I have a really special guest with me, and I'm really excited to talk to him about some of the things we've decided we're going to discuss tonight. I've got Travis Pipes on the line with me tonight. He is an NFL sports writer exclusively for the Green Bay Packers, but also writes for multiple other publications regarding sports, and he's also going to be starting a brand new show on the same network that this show is on, the Mental Health News Radio Network. It's called Wide Open Looks. It's going to be featuring stories of mental health, addiction, recovery, change, and perseverance inside and outside the line of sports. So, Travis, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today, Stephen. I'm really excited to sit down and have a conversation with you. Really glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for I'm really glad to have you here. So I know some of the listeners are probably going to be curious as to, you know, what does this really have to do since you know, your show and kind of what you do is geared towards the professional sports world. But what do you think, you know, if you were talking to one of the listeners right now, what would you say? Why would you say it's so important that we talk together, even though we're kind of coming from different angles?
Oh, that's a great question. I think ultimately the primary focus is stigma and mental illness are a silent disease, and it affects the world globally. And that definitely transcends our respective career paths, yours in emergency services and mine in journalism. And that's been something that I've been confronted with over the last 4+ years since I have decided to focus on treatment and wellness. And it's amazing the responses that people have had toward me that are not specifically in the world of journalism in that respect.
Well, okay, elaborate on that. When you say the responses people have had, what do you mean by that?
Well, initially, you know, it was definitely a question for myself to say, well, is this something I want to do? Do I want to write and talk candidly about my personal struggles related to substance abuse recovery? And when I decided to go into treatment back in 2013, early 2013 in February of that year, and I thought, you know, this is going to have an impact on my career and my pursuits as a sports writer. I was in denial about that fact at the very beginning, to be totally honest with you, Stephen. There's a part of me that thought maybe I have to sort of compartmentalize my personal life and my experiences in recovery and addiction and mental health versus my trajectory as a sports writer and somebody that had aspirations to do that in my career. So I had to confront that head on at one point, you know, in the last 3.5 years since I've been writing about this. And I worked with my life coach and guy that I consider to be my sponsor, who's been there every step of the way through this process, you know, through the ups and downs and more recently the ups. And he essentially said, you know, you have to make some decisions about whether or not you're able to be frank about your experience. But the reality is people want to hear that, people need to hear it, and being able to connect with others and have that resonate and give them some sort of a baseline of hope is something that really is a driving force in this whole process for me. So, you know, there's some stigma around it, though. All the feedback that I've gotten has not been 100% positive. I think that's part of the reason why I keep going and trying to do what I do. I think it's important to talk about those struggles. And the reality is there's a certain type of credibility that you have to have as somebody who is a writer, you know, in a sports writing world, obviously. For me, it's been important to be able to take ownership of those things and keep my head up and keep my chin up, as I like to say.
Well, I mean, it doesn't sound really too much different from myself, because, you know, you and I have talked off, you know, off the air on the phone and regular conversation about this, about how, you know, stepping out, you know, and shining a light on things that are just not really a comfortable topic. They are, you know, I mean, let's, you know, when it comes to first responder world, it's not, I like to say it's not sexy. It's not fires. It's not adrenaline. It's not exciting running to an emergency and, you know, the big parade going to the burning building. And in sports, it's not the Super Bowl. It's not, you know, it's not the, you know, the championship or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's none of those, you know, it's not flashy. It's not shiny. It's not attractive. But at the bottom line is underneath it all, if these things aren't addressed, those things break down, maybe not on a whole, but on an individual level.
Yeah, I would agree with that sentiment. I think for me, it's been important to realize that I don't have two different experiences at this point. I don't have my world in recovery, you know, from substance abuse, and I don't have my world as, you know, corporate manager in one track of my career and as somebody that's an aspiring sports writer in the other. That I've been working diligently towards the last, you know, five or six seasons. For me, it's important to recognize that those two entities can live together. That was a difficult approach for me to have in the beginning. I think that's part of early recovery, though, too. Just in my own experience, I like to talk in I statements, obviously.
Sure, me too. I try to.
Yeah. Again, my personal experience isn't going to be the same as the next guy. But going into treatment, you know, I went into inpatient hospital treatment in 2013, and it wasn't a wake-up call in the traditional sense. It was a reality check, because I felt like I had to really come to terms with who I was as a person and my character about certain things and the decisions I was making in my personal life related to, you know, hard drugs and whatnot, and that effect that it had on my life. It affected my credibility in the sense that I wasn't able to meet deadlines. You know, I had my editor at the Sports Illustrated platform tell me at one point in week 6 in the 2012 season that I wasn't going to write anymore that year. And you know what? That experience happened for me, and I was devastated, but I wasn't. And that type of paradigm is really important to call out in the experience, because it's not always, you know, the triumph, like as you say, the Super Bowl or the championship experience. Or the victory, although I do think America loves a comeback story. That's definitely been my inclination as I've started to get a little bit more into the world of sports and mental health. But at the end of the day, I think part of the lesson, at least for me, is trying to establish some character and some credibility on my own track in my personal life. And that I think has carried over into my ability to have some connection with my audience and to be a better writer. And I think that that's ultimately what drives me in my aspirations as I move ahead.
Well, you know, there's also something that I've been finding interesting, because I'm in another place where I'm working, you know, in the recovery world. I'm working with a gentleman who's who's been a football coach for past 20 years at Arizona State, Tennessee State, and he's coached many men on to the NFL. And what was fascinating to me that I didn't know is when he was, I believe it was at Tennessee State coaching, you know, the coaching season, the football season is only a few months of the year. So, you know, I mean, my ignorance, I didn't know that, you know, I just figured, well, the rest of the year, the coach just kind of hangs out. But no, apparently that's not true. He actually, his job as a coach was to manage the players' lives. And a lot of that included taking these young players to AA meetings, to rehab, to detox, because they were, you know, they were dealing with human issues of substance abuse, of, you know, depression, of, you know, anxiety or whatever. And he said it's very, very much the same thing in the NFL and professional sports, or NBA, or, you know, and professional baseball and many of the other sports. It's just not known about. It's not, you know.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting point. I think just in my short experience, the last couple of years, as I've tried to reach my groove, my rhythm, if you will, in writing about some of the things that I'm passionate about, and some of those things are sports, obviously, the reality is that there are people out there who have the same types of experiences that I did, who carry a pretty extensive reach, who can affect, you know, the audience, who can, you know, connect with people who are struggling in recovery, or who have not made a decision to enter into recovery. And I was out with family, with my significant other in Las Vegas over Christmas just this past year. We go out there every year for the holidays, and it's kind of like a big family get together. And, you know, I ended up watching a little bit of an E60 ESPN mini documentary on Ryan Leaf, who is a quarterback in the NFL that was selected in the first round. He's widely considered to be the biggest, you know, quote unquote bust in NFL history. He kind of flamed out of the NFL after 4 or 5 seasons. And then he fell into serious hard substance abuse addiction, and at one point was arrested and sent to prison for stealing pain medication from some people in this community down in Texas and Montana. So his story is that he went to prison, and this guy had literally everything, you know, the prototypical, you know, all-American story. He had money in the bank and a beautiful family and a career that was very promising and lots of fame and recognition, and he threw it all away. And in the end of this documentary, towards the end, he said, you know, I really have to change my life, or else I'm going to end up dead. And, you know, I relate to that. I know what that's like. And, you know, I don't have the same type of celebrity that this particular pro athlete did, but he had a moment of clarity, which I think is typical of the experience in recovery when a person decides to make the decision to try and get some help. You know, I can't choose that I have addict-like tendencies when it comes to hard drugs. What I can change is my response to certain things. And listening to him talk about it in this realistic way, you know, without the expectation of fame, without the expectation of the spotlight, you know, he called up a rehab center in San Diego and said, hey, you don't know who I am. I'm Joe Anonymous, addict and alcoholic on the street. Is there any way I could get into your facility and start working? And they gave him a job making $8 an hour, taking other addicts and alcoholics to meetings and sweeping floors and putting together the schedule and changing bedpans and being able to stay up all night when people are having seizures, assisting the nursing staff. Now he's one of the directors at that particular treatment facility, and he goes around and he talks about his experience as a way to connect with people, because addiction doesn't care if you're a professional athlete. They don't care if you're a famous celebrity or, you know, a famous actor or, you know, an advocate. It affects every person. There's not one person, I don't think, in our audience, and at least in my personal life, that hasn't had some sort of an impact because of addiction in one format or another. And that's really brought it home for me, in the sense that, you know, I struggle with certain things, and, you know, being 4 years plus into this experience, I feel like I have a way to identify what some of those triggers are, where I need to be, and the community that I'm in. And really, it's all about identifying how to connect with somebody who can help you and being willing to talk about it. So to have that type of experience where you see somebody, or, you know, I've had the opportunity to interview some people in this early experience with some of my shows that are coming up, with athletes and people who are, I would consider, you know, quote unquote influencers, the coaching staff and the support staff and psychological medical staff that are involved with these types of people. These are the people that can really influence, you know, the next generation and really talk about it openly. And I think that that's ultimately the goal with a lot of these things that we're seeing on TV now, is that there seems to be a tendency to look at mental health in a little bit more of a positive light. And that, to me, I feel means that the stigma that's around it is starting to recede a little bit. That's a really important part of this whole process.
Well, you know, I was talking to Kristen, the CEO of our network, recently about, you know, just the word stigma. And, you know, if you take away the, I mean, the word stigma really means discrimination. It's really no different. So do we discriminate against a diabetic because they have issues with diabetes, or someone who eats, you know, 10, you know, eats 10 cheeseburgers a day and winds up with heart disease? Do we discriminate against them? Is there, no, we don't.
No.
Do we, is there a stigma against them? No, but there is a stigma and or discrimination when it comes to mental health issues. And another thing that Kristen says, that she says it, I believe, on every show of hers that I love, is she says, you know, who is affected by mental health? Well, everybody, because we all are, you know, we all have that aspect to our being. So it stands to reason that we have to, you know, start addressing it. And, you know, I had a guy on the show last night who's a real change maker. He's a real trailblazer. He's a career firefighter who is also a mental health advocate. And we were talking about broken, you know, in compared to sports or just anything, you know, you could see somebody with a broken leg or a physical injury. Physical injuries are obvious. They're easy to see, but it's these issues that affect us that are underneath the surface that usually don't get seen until something major happens.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely, that's really, really fantastic point you're bringing up. In the world of sports, as I'm sure it is in the world of emergency services, you know, if you're, my understanding is if you're a firefighter and you go to a call, you're expected to suit up and put your helmet on, grab the hose and go in and do what you're trained to do. That same scenario carries over to the world of sports and athletics competition in the sense that, you know, I had a chance to talk to Keith O'Neill from the Indianapolis Colts. He won a Super Bowl back in 2006. Chris Walker and I had a conversation with him about a week ago or so, and he became very emotional. He was very candid about having conversations where he disclosed some of the anxiety and sleep issues that he was dealing with in his first ever training camp. And then when he went to the Indianapolis Colts from Dallas, and he said, you know, there's a certain level of reception, but there's also a certain level of expectation of performance. I mean, I think he said, you know, don't direct quote me, but he basically insinuated that you're a professional athlete, and unless your leg is cut off, you're expected to suit up and show up and play and perform. And there's an expectation, I think, although I do think it's shifting in the NFL specifically, the organization management and leadership in that particular pro sport, I think, is starting to understand some of the impacts of brain health, as indicated with some of the CTE studies and whatnot. But to kind of get back to your point, there's an expectation in pro sports and in all sports and in college sports. I mean, I would venture to guess if you were to ask high school football players, you know, what their tendency would be to play through injury to be there for their team in that environment, I would venture to guess that most of them would say that they would play through it if they were able to. And, you know, in Keith's experience, his, you know, inability to handle anxiety and the propensity to just throw medication blindly at the problem didn't really fix it. And he ended up retiring due to some of the impact of those particular issues. And you can hear more about that in the interview as it gets debuted on the network in the coming weeks. But, you know, it's just another reminder to me in my position as somebody that, you know, absorbs and writes about sports in whatever capacity, and now my experience in mental health, that it's not just visible injuries. I mean, you could look at somebody and say, you know, I look fairly normal, or they look fairly normal. And at the end of the day, addiction isn't just the guy sleeping on Skid Row on the sidewalk, you know, that hasn't taken a shower in 9 months and isn't coherent and is kind of just dodging around the sidewalk and doesn't really know where he's at. There's a tendency to look at the addiction, in my experience, from that type of perspective. And so, you know, I talk to people now in my, you know, story as I've started to share them at different events and venues and working with people in recovery, and now with this venture on my upcoming show. And the reality is most people think, well, how could you be an addict? And I really have to get down to the brass tacks of it, Stephen. And they hear about my story of, you know, being homeless briefly and going into treatment and basically living out of a backpack and not taking a shower for 6 months plus. And that's a conservative estimate. And, you know, all the sort of traditional hallmarks that we look at, right, when it comes to addiction. And they look at me now and they think, well, it looks like you're fairly clean cut and you're articulate and you're doing the things that you love. So how do you have an issue? You know, doesn't mean I don't have that problem still or that I don't struggle. And that's the thing when it comes to visibility, right? If you have cancer, if you have diabetes or some other, you know, traditional experience, you're expected to have this response. And, you know, I'm obviously fascinated by what your experience has been along those lines in emergency services. Well, I think there's definitely a connection between the two verticals for sure.
Well, also what's interesting that I find too, and this kind of came again from speaking to this guy on the, having him on the show yesterday, was that there's this attitude, there's this culture, and I imagine it's the same in the sports world, that when somebody crashes and burns or winds up, you know, in rehab or something like that, there's this tendency for the general consensus to be, well, I guess he's just not good enough. He's not cut out for this. So we just write him off. He's done.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I've done a good amount of research into sort of the parallels of mental health and specifically addiction and recovery and professional and high level collegiate sports, specifically football. And there's just endless amounts of stories of athletes in earlier eras that went through pretty serious addiction and recovery and were kind of cast aside by their organizations and by their respective leagues and by their families. And I just literally last night read on a story about the University of Wisconsin. They are about to release their top 100 UW Badger football players of all time. And there's a number of them in the early and mid 70s and 80s that, you know, achieved all these things and had aspirations in the pro ranks and ended up falling into addiction to, you know, cocaine and other stuff and alcoholism. And now they're some of them that are working in advocacy today, but some of them that just haven't recovered and spent time going through the revolving door of prisons. And, you know, there's this issue of like race and like sentencing guidelines that they were affected by in that particular point in time. That's sort of a related issue. And at the end of the day, I think I touched on this earlier, America loves a comeback story. You know, we want to hear about, you know, CC Sabathia and Steve Sarkisian. These are guys that I've had some conversations with who have detailed their experiences with substance abuse and alcoholism respectively, and how they've started to try and change and also affect change. And, but there's also a slew of stories that, of guys who, you know, have kind of drank and used their way out of the league, and they're guys that need help. And the organizations and the management leadership within their pro sports, and this goes across the whole spectrum, Stephen, there needs to be a little bit more attention paid to the messages that are being sent in these types of experiences with guys who, you know, fall into addiction and are just kind of like, you know, what the expectation is, you know, they're not worth anything. And that's got to be hard as an athlete who has achieved a certain amount of success at whatever point in life, and then it's all taken away very suddenly.
They say that pain shared is pain lessened. How would you feel if you had someone to unload your burdens with? Someone who has probably felt how you feel and been in your shoes. Someone who wants to help you to manifest dramatic and lasting change in your life. Not only do I host this show and speak around the country, I also do individual coaching and mentoring. I want to help you to climb out of the hole of isolation, despair, and hardship. Contact me at rescuetherescuer.com to set up your free, no-obligation consultation. I'm confident that together we can develop a plan that is tailor-made to you and your goals and purpose. Well, we had this just hit me so hard talking to this guy last night who, in the last couple months, in his own career, you know, his fire department that he works for, a relatively large, you know, urban fire department, in the last few months, they lost two of their guys, both of them to overdoses. Mm-hmm. Two career firemen. One was 20-year veteran of the service, and he had gotten caught up in people had known, I guess they had known that he was struggling, and it was kind of known, but it was kind of, I guess they had sent him to rehab once or twice, and he actually wound up getting some criminal charges due to the nature and the progressive nature of the addiction, and he wound up losing his job. And a couple weeks after he was actually fired from the fire department, they found the same tour, the same group of guys that he worked with got called to his house, and he had overdosed on cocaine and died. And they said, well, are we going to do, you know, a fireman's funeral for this guy and everything? And administration said, absolutely not. Do not show up to his funeral in our uniform. You will not be representing us when you go there. There will be no parade. There will be none of the traditional things you see. And these guys were totally heartbroken. This was a guy they worked with. And, it was just swept under the rug. 30 days later, another guy who was still employed with them was working on the same fire department with them. He wasn't in trouble, but everybody knew he had a problem. They wound up getting called to his house, and he overdosed and died of heroin. Now, since he was still employed, they had the firefighter funeral and everything like that. But there has been zero talk from administration to the guys about, hey, maybe we need to start addressing these issues. It's just been dropped. Oh, well, they're gone. See you later.
Right. Yeah. That's devastating to hear that kind of response, especially from the perspective of us. You know, I'm a citizen who looks at emergency services and the management personnel and leadership and, infrastructure as people that have this ability to have care and kindness. So to hear that type of response in that sort of global way that you just portrayed personally is just, that's really hard to hear. But at on the other side of that spectrum, Stephen, it's also not that surprising to me, because I think part of the biggest issue that I think perpetuates stigma, especially in sports, at least in my experience, and being in writing and being in journalism, is there is an expectation, I think, of a certain type of standard. And we're not at the place yet in the world that we live in where people who are in these traditional career trajectories, like journalism and firefighting, for example, ironically, right? They have these expectations of service and performance that I think are not really quite adapting to the way that life and the world is changing around us. There needs to be a little bit more of an evolution in that sense. And from a writing perspective, and, in my experience, which, I haven't been covering the NFL or the Green Bay Packers for the last 25 seasons. I only have, a comparatively small, percent of experience based on, what I've looked at and what I've seen and what I've absorbed. And, Green Bay is a team and a town that has, in my opinion, a quote unquote different set of expectations and values. And that carries over to the community. And I think it's part of, where we live. There's an epidemic in the state of Wisconsin as it applies to heroin and, methamphetamine and whatnot. And we're slowly starting to address those issues on a local community level. But it impacts the school districts here. It impacts, teams. There's a town in Walworth County, Williams Bay, that doesn't have a football program anymore. And part of it is because the coaching staff, a couple members of the coaching staff and some of the members of the team are involved or were involved in substance abuse issues. And the administration decided to put the program on probation. So the greater contingency of kids that want to go out and participate in this activity that are, going to help you and build teamwork and build camaraderie and help you learn lessons in life that I think are important and not be, out on the streets causing trouble or using drugs or selling drugs or whatever, they're being penalized by the actions of another. And that's hard to hear, because I think sports is the common denominator. Sports, I think, is the great equalizer in the world that we live in, in a lot of ways. And, there's always going to be stories of people who are involved in decision-making capacities and an athletic performance capacity that, drugs and alcohol get in the way. And I do think the NFL is changing. They've established just within the last 4 or 5 seasons a lot of really excellent programming for players and former players who are going into post-playing and retirement to take care of their emotional needs and therapy and talk therapy. And there's a lot of resources being made available to them that I think is going to help stem that, tide of, here's so-and-so player that had this prestigious career, and all of a sudden, 4 years later, you read about them on a police blotter in wherever they're at, and they're going into the prison system, and they've lost everything, and you know their life is a total shambles. And those experiences, I don't think are going to be completely eradicated. I don't think we've seen our last experience of Ryan Leaf by any stretch. That's just part of human nature. But at the end of the day, I think America does love a comeback story, and I think that that applies to the world of emergency services, and that they're serving the community, right? Stephen, you guys are out there touch point with this community every single day, and it's no different with sports. I mean, look around you and you talk to somebody out at a restaurant or the grocery store or the library, and you're in a particular area. I walk around, I call Southeastern Wisconsin home. I'm in the Milwaukee area, and I obviously love the Packers, and it's something I'm proud about and patriotic, and I wear on my sleeve openly. And that's just something that connects the people, that connects the team to the communities, and it gives people a sense of pride and a sense of purpose. And I think substance abuse and recovery and mental health is interwoven into that just based on the experiences of the people that they look up to, literally in this case. I mean, back in the 90s when I was growing up, you know, 12 years old, Brett Favre, you know, went into the Mayo Clinic for addiction to prescription painkillers, you know, and then he went to treatment for 3 months and wasn't in the media, and he came back to training camp, and the Packers won the Super Bowl for the first time in 30 years. It like galvanized the state and the fandom. And it was an experience that kind of showed me, you know, ironically in retrospect, that people can put in the effort to change and that there is a greater good. And I think that that's an important message to focus on here for sure, aside from sports and emergency services.
Yeah, you're right. Cause that's a global message. And you know, I had a phone call yesterday with a lady. I'm in one of those podcasting communities on Facebook, and this lady, you know, listened to my show, and I never spoke to her before, and she goes, "I have some feedback. I'd love to talk to you on the phone." I said, "All right." So I called her, and she said, "You know, I love the idea of what you're doing, because I never thought about it before. I always, you know, I'm one of those people that's just an average citizen who just have that expectation that if I have an emergency, I call 911 and someone's going to show up and fix my problem. I never thought how that problem that these people are coming to fix affects that person."
Right.
And I said, "Wow, that's interesting." And you know, I didn't even really think about it from that point of view necessarily.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you can put a jersey on and turn your TV on Sunday afternoons and watch football, but a lot of these guys at one point were average citizens who came from small town communities or wherever it was. And now they have these issues and they're expected to be, you know, the reality is, Stephen, there's an expectation as a professional athlete to have a different response and a different approach to the things that I think a lot of people struggle with. And that's got to be, you know, as I'm not a professional athlete, unfortunately, you know, playing football for the Packers, my expectation is that as a professional athlete, there's a lot of pressure you carry around every day to conform and to do the right things and say the right things. And there's this constant scrutiny in the media, and all your moves are constantly analyzed, and there's fans everywhere that want a piece of you, and the spotlight shines bright, right? That's the cliche. And I can only imagine what the coping mechanisms would be for somebody that's in that position that has, you know, a family to care for and, you know, friends that he needs to continue to interact with from his younger days. And I know what my coping mechanisms were when I was struggling with some things in my life, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, and how I handled that. And I don't think that that response is all that different from me to, say, a Brett Favre, you know?
Yeah.
We cope with things a certain way. I mean, would you agree with that sentiment?
Oh, I think humanity hasn't really changed to my knowledge since the beginning of humans. So, I mean, it stands to reason that regardless of what hat you put on when you leave the house, it doesn't really matter. You know, I was recently watching just the other day a documentary about the actor Heath Ledger, who passed away from a combination of prescription drugs.
Right.
And he, you know, just right before his, just maybe about a year or so before his death, him and his wife, who he had met her on a movie set, and they became, you know, they got married. He bought a house, had a dream home built on a beach in Australia. And he got, you know, he had had it built, spent all this time. This was what he wanted. This was his dream. This was going to be his place to go when he wanted to get away and with his family and just be himself, not be what everybody wanted him to be. And he said he went there and he couldn't even stay there because the paparazzi, the people, everybody wanted to bang on his door at 3 o'clock in the morning to get a picture with him, or all this stuff. The pressure, he couldn't go to the grocery store. He couldn't go to get gas in his car without somebody coming to harass him. And
right.
So, I mean, it may not be to the extreme when, you know, I mean, and it's the same, I think, in sports as well. When you're in that big spotlight, people want that piece of you.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think, an expectation as an athlete, at least based on some of the early conversations I've had with several former players who went through that process over a period of time. You know, a couple guys I've talked to have been, you know, playing in the NFL for upwards of 10 seasons. So just imagine the stress of going to your job. Imagine going to, let's reframe that. Imagine going to your job. You know, you're working down at the firehouse in your neighborhood, and every single day you drive your car or your truck and you park it down there. There's a throng of people waving things at you to sign, screaming your name, you know, interfering with your ability to get in and prepare accordingly. There's media and cameras everywhere recording your every move at this particular point in our life. And that's the world we live in. Then you go into practice and you have coaches, you know, screaming at you in whatever way. And whether they yell actually or they insinuate actually, you have a job to perform. And then you go to a game environment or whatever. You go down to a fire and there's, you know, news crews pull up and we made a mistake, didn't get chopped the roof open in time, and the whole house structure burned, and now 10 families are displaced. And then there's all this negative scrutiny in the media and questions about your capabilities and what, you know, if you made the right decisions. You know, did the captain make the right decision? He's the quarterback of that unit, so to speak, right? If you were going to put a sports cliche into it. And then you go home and you have all these people, you know, threatening your family and putting for sale signs in your yard and spray painting your truck and, you know, threatening your kids at their school when they go to school in that same community. And, you know, these are the types of things that athletes go through, you know, and the support staff and management and referees. And it's no different than, you know, I would assume a fire department and the scrutiny that they're given by the media. You know, we all have social media, and most of my social media news feeds, for the most part, having, you know, a responsibility to follow most of the sports news, I also follow a lot of the local news, and a lot of it is coverage related to, you know, fires breaking out and crime and, you know, on the negative side of the spectrum. And I think that that's got to impact the people who are the decision makers in those respective career tracks. And, you know, from a sports perspective, to kind of bring it back home, is if you're a coach or a player in an environment where there's stress and pressure, and, you know, you're expected to win and perform and represent your community and, you know, reach the ultimate standards as a professional athlete and win a championship or win the division or win the Super Bowl. And that's a lot of pressure to carry around day to day. And I think that there's a way that's kind of stuff manifests in all the problems that crop up behind the scenes as an athlete. So, you know, just at my limited experience in the world of mental health as it applies to sports, there's all these, like, you know, subsidiary issues that we look at when it comes to mental health. It's not just the stigma of it or addiction specifically. It's also like, how are teams looking at injury and treatment and pain management and, like, the issue of, you know, long-term substance abuse that's been perpetuated by these professional organizations that just, you know, Brandon Marshall is a wide receiver for the New York Giants, and he's kind of bounced around the league here and there, but he's a star player, has said on record numerous times, teams have, like, garbage pails of Percocet and Valium and Vicodin just available to take like candy in locker rooms a lot of the places in the NFL, because that's how you stay numb. That's how you work through injuries. That's how you perform on game days. You know, there's this propensity, I think, to immediately treat some of these injuries with highly addictive substances, you know, benzodiazepines and opiates and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, that just leaves a trail of addiction and recovery and perpetuates and kind of pushes that track further. So imagine having some of those social experiences and those social issues and coping with anxiety, like, you know, Keith O'Neill did and like a lot of the professional athletes do. And how do you cope with those things if you're in that environment? Do you stay away from that? Do you continue to use it? Do you, you know, self-medicate? I mean, I understand my personal experience. I have to believe it's not all that different if you're a professional athlete who puts a jersey on, you know, week to week.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to kind of bring everything home, I think we've kind of really proven the point that all mental health issues, addiction, anxiety, depression, so, you know, any relationship failure, all of those things
right.
affect everybody in every walk of life, whether you're making $70 million a year in the NFL, or you're making $30,000 a year driving an ambulance, it doesn't, you know, it's so, you know, the economic, you know, this is like the great level or mental health, because right. it affects, if you have a brain and you have the capacity to be affected by your environment and the the experiences you have in life, then your mental health obviously is a part of that, no matter who you are.
Yeah, I would agree. There's a sense of equality, I think, that mental health and the experiences that come with it bring to the sports world. And I think everyday average Joe American, you know, us included in our respective careers, we look at that, at least I do, and think, you know, there's not a big separation other than maybe the paycheck and the prestige from some of the issues of mental health. And the reality is, you know, it affects people in a way that I don't think is all that widely understood. And you know, I'm blessed to have an opportunity and grateful for the opportunity to make the connection between those two things in a medium that I love as it applies to my experience as a sports writer and some of the things I want to do in my career moving forward. And having these conversations, you know, with you and with some of the people on the network, and as my show gets ready to debut here in the coming weeks, it's interesting for me to see all the different available channels to talk about mental health and how that could affect positively, not just people in the audience, but maybe we could work on changing the flow and stemming the tide of the impact of some of those things so that people don't have to struggle alone, because mental illness is a silent disease.
Well, you know, it's interesting, you know, to really wrap it up here is, you know, you said something earlier about, you know, I'm not a professional sports player, you know, and a football player with the, you know, with the Green Bay Packers, unfortunately. So, I mean, I imagine, you know, in your dream world, that's what you would, you know, that's, that would be your thing. That's that which you would love to do that. In some aspect where, you know, and the same for, and I say this to say with me, you know, if I could go back and get on a paramedic unit, I would, but I'm yeah. in a position where I can't, you know, I mean, I don't know if you're in a position, maybe you can go be a Green Bay Packer one day. I don't know.
I'm pretty confident that that's not reality.
Okay. So
I would have settled for being a firefighter. If I had to go back and do it all again, I'd probably study fire science and maybe be a paramedic EMT. So we have that connection.
Well, we have that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, we can't maybe necessarily do those things that we wanted to do or that we did do and can't do anymore. But we are in a unique position because we have the integrity to stand behind what we believe. We have the voice that's willing to be loud and speak from a loud podium to the world about what's about these issues, because we know how important they are. And we also know that we're standing here with a 700 pound boulder trying to push it up a 90 degree angled mountain, because that's what we're trying to do. Trying to change a culture at large starts with very, 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 very small amounts of progress. But just look at where we are today. We're having this conversation. We both have shows on a network that is solely dedicated to mental health.
Yeah, it's an amazing opportunity. I think it's going to be great to have that level of reach, and we're looking forward to the next steps with all of it. And really appreciate you having me on today, Stephen.
I appreciate you being here. Before we go, I want everybody to be able to find you. So give a little bit of boost for yourself so people know where to get you, where to sure. locate you.
Yeah, so I do a content writing via Facebook at a site called The Pack Mentality. If you go to Facebook, we've got over 40,000 users. They follow the Green Bay Packers, everything Green Bay football. I've also done some contributing work for USA Today at the Packers Wire, thepackerswire.com. You'll find my work there as well. And my show on the network on Mental Health News Radio is called Wide Open Looks, hosted by myself. And we're going to discuss stories of mental health, addiction, recovery, challenge, and perseverance, both inside and outside the lines of sports. Lots of amazing characters are going to be on that show. Some great interviews, some great subject matter. It would be great to get you guys to tune in and listen. That'll be debuting TBD here in the coming weeks with Chris Walker and her group here at the Mental Health News Radio. And other than that, I think looking forward to having some more conversations just like this one. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome. And I will definitely ensure when I get the show notes together to ensure that all the places that you just mentioned can be located there as well. So,
all right.
Thanks a lot, Travis, for being here today. And we'll be speaking to you soon, everybody.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. I really hope it'll help you or your loved one. If you get a chance, I really would appreciate it if you could head over to iTunes and Apple Podcasts and leave a review. It will really help me out in many ways. Take care everyone, and remember, you are not alone in your struggle.
I want to give a big shout out to one of our supporters, the Addictions Academy. The Addictions Academy is the world's foremost accredited trainer of addiction coaches, addiction counselors, interventionists, and international master addiction coaches, offering on-site training at your rehab or facility, live virtual classroom webinars, or on-demand classes covering an extensive availability of courses and certifications. Check them out at theaddictionsacademy.com or call Dr. Callie Estes and her team at 1-800-706-0318.
Thanks for listening to Rescue the Rescuer. For show notes and more, head on over to rescuetherescuer.com.
We are a part of the Mental Health News Radio Network.com. This show is produced by James Healy of RecoveryInnovators.com. If you have a message and want to start a show of your own, contact him and let him know that we sent you.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.